The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Episode 289 of the Read to Lead podcast is brought to you in part by FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software, now offering a free unlimited 30-day trial. Find out more when you visit freshbooks.com/read to lead and enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section.
Connecting people one-to-one, making introductions, following up on introductions. You can't really do that easily within a LinkedIn private message or Facebook or Twitter DM or whatever. You need a little more of a canvas there. So email is still key for this.
Hey there, and welcome to the Read to Lead podcast. My name is Jeff, and this is the podcast that's dedicated to your personal and your professional growth. If you know me at all, you know that I believe that if you desire to achieve true success in business and in life, then intentional and consistent reading is a must. We're going to help you sift through the clutter here and pay attention to the books you need to be paying attention to. Each and every week, we sit down with a successful and inspiring author, and we dig into his or her latest book and their unique insights on a number of different topics. Today, we'll be joined by Karen Wickre. That's W-I-C-K-R-E. She's author of the book, Taking the Work Out of Networking, Your Guide to Making and Keeping Great Connections. I'll ask Karen to share about why the people you already know are not likely to be your best resource when it comes to looking for a new job, tips for shaping what your social media accounts say about you to others, leveraging email for networking, and how to know when to move beyond it, and a lot more. If you're anything like me, you're always on the lookout for another great podcast to listen to. I wanted to recommend this week, The Science of Success. It is the number one evidence-based growth podcast on the internet. The Science of Success is about the search for evidence-based personal growth. It's about exploring ways to improve your decision-making, understand your mind, and how psychology rules the world around you. I recommend starting with an episode from earlier this month called How to Listen, the most underrated leadership hack in the 21st century. I'll put a link to the podcast in the show notes. Again, it's called The Science of Success, and you'll find that show notes page at readtoleadpodcast.com/289. Karen Wickre is a 30-year communications veteran of Silicon Valley. Most recently, she was editorial director at Twitter, where she landed after nearly 10 years with Google. Currently a senior consultant at global advisory firm Brunswick Group, she also chairs the board of visitors at the John S. Knight Journalism Fellowships at Stanford University and serves on the boards of the News Literacy Project and the Yerba Buena Center for the Arts. Her writing has been featured in Wired.com, First Round Review, and many other publications. Her book, originally released last year, is going to be available in paperback beginning this Tuesday and includes a brand new chapter. You can actually pre-order the paperback version right now. It's called Taking the Work Out of Networking, Your Guide to Making and Keeping Great Connections. I'm excited to be able to now call her one of my connections. Karen, welcome to the Read to Lead podcast.
Thank you so much, Jeff. I'm excited to be here.
Well, in the writing of this book and in the research you did going into it, and just over the course of your career, Karen, what have you found to be some of the common reasons that a lot of us seem to despise traditional networking?
Well, introverts and extroverts alike, I asked a lot of people, why do you hate this so much? And, you know, the answers are not surprising, perhaps. It feels phony. It feels too transactional. You're there to make an ask, and then everything surrounding it is superficial. And people are kind of, especially at a networking event or a conference, for example, people are kind of looking past each other while they're trying to make that connection for a minute. Yeah. So it feels uncomfortable for everybody.
Mm. Well, why do you suggest, Karen, that introverts, I consider myself an introvert, you know, those of us who often hate the thought of networking the most, possess a secret power, you say, that we need to unleash on the world?
Yeah, well, I too am an introvert. I've read a fair amount about this now, all thanks to Susan Cain and her, you know, landmark book, Quiet. But I would say, so we're all on a spectrum. It's not necessarily all or one of any particular thing. But what I'd say is, as a longtime someone who doesn't like to talk first, I like to get the other person to talk first, right? And I've determined from watching myself and lots of other people over time, introverts are great at listening, right? We want to listen and hear and understand context before we commit to jumping in on anything. I think going along with that, having a kind of keen power of observation. I know I'm curious about people's behavior and their, you know, why they act the way they do, why they're always negative, why they're always enthusiastic, whatever it is. And so these are great skills to have in order to make genuine connections with other people, I think, as opposed to putting yourself out there first. And then I think having a genuine, being curious about other people, but not necessarily wanting to, you know, again, put yourself out in front. These are great skills for making really authentic connections with people that are going to stick. And by the way, people you like and people who will like you.
Well, speaking of genuine and authentic connections, I often have been guilty of priding myself, Karen, on the number of connections that I have. Can you speak to the importance of the quality of your connections over the quantity of them?
Yeah, I'm kind of hoping we're past this thing of follower counts and all that that kind of went on in the earlier years of social media.
Yeah.
I'm with you. I mean, I pay attention to those numbers, but really what counts is in the moment when you want to ask someone a question or someone reaches out to you, it's the numbers melt away, right? It's really about that one-to-one connection in the moment. It's nice to have a number of people to call on, but you're not ever calling en masse on people generally, unless you have a broad, really broad kind of public question. So to me, paying attention to the quality, and this goes to what I was just saying, people you like, you don't have to know everybody. You want to pay attention to the people who, you know, resonate with you and for whom you are, you know, someone they are fond of for whatever reason, a good colleague at work or someone you've had a great conversation with that was unexpected. That's what quality is about.
I should mention that Karen's book is divided into three parts. Part one, the part we're digging into now, is called The Elements of Connecting. We'll get to part two in a moment, The Online Toolkit. Describe what you mean, Karen, by the loose touch habit, and what are some ways that we can build that habit naturally into our day?
Yeah. Well, in fact, perhaps the loose touch habit, as I call it, is the key to actually building a network, as opposed to meeting lots of people. So a loose touch, keeping in touch with people informally and intermittently is really what loose touch habit means. It means you're not constantly filling your schedule with updates and dinners and lunches and coffees and all that. You can do that occasionally, of course, as you need, but you will know over the course of your life and your career a lot more people than you'll ever have a real sit down with, especially these days when we know so many more people online primarily. Keeping in touch is simply having a way to reach out to someone when you don't have a need or a transaction, simply to say, hey, I'm thinking of you because I just read this news story, or I know you're following this you know, company or a new development here that just happened, or your sports team won or lost last night. Thinking of you, it doesn't require an answer. It doesn't require making a date. It's simply a way of saying, hey, I remember you. I know you. I know something about you. Hope you're well. Hope we see each other soon. The other person can say, hey, yeah, me too. Thanks. But for that moment, you've had that touch point, and that keeps you in loose touch.
Well, Karen says that when it comes to things like career-related searches, people you already know are not likely to be your best resources. What? Talk about weak ties, if you would, Karen, and why we need to look to those, especially in situations like career-related searches.
Yeah, you know, I think we're all maybe familiar with this notion of weak ties. And I looked into it. I actually read the original study. It's a sociology professor at Stanford who wrote this 40 years ago. He actually studied people who were doing a job search and discovered that what he described as their weak ties led much more often to a lead that led to a job. Now, the reason I think this is it's maybe similar to why some people would hire a therapist as opposed to turning to friends and family, right? It's sort of like you're going to know more people. You need people who may have a specific piece of information you need in your job hunt, let's say. So someone may know about a company or a role or the new division or what it was like to work there till they recently left or whatever it is. This is a much broader group of people who have intelligence for you than your closest circle. So the point of having former colleagues, again, people, that you've brushed up against or maybe get an introduction to through someone you know, they may have exactly the piece of information that you need and you wouldn't ordinarily be in touch with them, but it might be just this moment. Now, that is transactional, but it's transaction with a purpose. And the context is such that you can, you know, explain, here's what I'm looking for. I'd love a little bit of your time for this or that. But these weak ties are often the ones to people do want to help each other. So someone will say, oh, yeah, I do. I'd be happy to tell you about that company or that role the executive or whatever, because everybody, I think, instinctively knows, I hope, that we're all going to have those kind of questions. We're all going to need that help. So it's a little bit of pay it forward.
I like that. I'm moving to part two of Karen's book now, your online toolkit, she calls it. Karen, so many people, I think, struggle to blend the personal with the professional online. Maybe on LinkedIn, it's all professional. On Facebook, maybe it's all personal. It's one side or the other. Do you suggest showing a little of both sides of your life, regardless of the social media platform you're on?
Well, I do, just because these days, I think because of the rise of pick whichever platforms you want. I mean, we've seen a rise of more people sharing more information, more personal information. Many, I would say, okay, we'll say many people are now used to this or see this a lot. We see it from celebrities. We see it from executives. We see it from leaders. Sheryl Sandberg famously talked about her husband's death and how that affected her. Other people who have taken a leave for an illness from an executive position. We see this blend and I think are generally more comfortable with it. Naturally, you can control how much you share, and that's always a good idea. But I think that because of that, to not share anything or to keep the lines really hard and fast and kind of everything is siloed can actually make you seem a little inauthentic, right? You're like, what's this person like? What else do they like to do? In the old days on a resume, typically at the bottom, you might say, oh, I love skiing and hiking. Right. And I'm a den mom to, you know, the Cub Scouts or something. Well, the equivalent of that now is kind of the things that we may share. Now, I agree with you. Facebook was designed really for friends and family, even though it's gone beyond those bounds. LinkedIn was designed for strictly professional. But even on LinkedIn, you'll see people talking about a charitable cause, for example, or something that is, close to them personally that they want to help with. So and Twitter, I think, is somewhere in between. Again, people can control or expand what they'd like to about their own interests. Some people only have Twitter for a professional cause and some others are all personal. And again, some are in between. So I think that it's in the culture. It's a good idea to show a little humanness. And it's more way to connect with other people. It's around maybe those common bonds that you actually make the more authentic connections.
Well, I want to encourage you to make a connection with FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software. If you run a small business or otherwise, and you're not using FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software, I'm not sure how you managed to pull that off, because I can't pull that off. I've been using FreshBooks for about 10 years, and it has been with me every step of the way, from the time my business started to now and every phase in between. It's grown right along with me. It is the perfect tool to keep track of what's coming in and going out of my business. And I think it's the perfect tool for you as well. I wouldn't be recommending it if I didn't believe that. And now is as good a time as any to give FreshBooks a try, because they've got this unlimited 30-day trial they're offering you for free, which means you can access all of FreshBooks' features during the trial. There's no obligation. They don't take a credit card number, any of that. Try it free for 30 days and see if you don't agree with me at the end of that trial. You can find out more about it, freshbooks.com/readtolead, and be sure to enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Take it for a test drive. See what you think. Again, freshbooks.com/readtolead. One of the things I really liked about the book, Karen, is your extensive tips for several of these platforms, LinkedIn, Twitter, and Instagram, I believe, are the three that you dove into. Take LinkedIn as an example. What, in your view, would be some best practices for getting the most out of that platform?
Well, I would say LinkedIn has changed in very interesting ways. Mm. It's still, as you have said, it's still more professional. And that's good. I appreciate that they decided not to go in all directions for all people and all purposes. But what they have done that I like a lot, there are a couple things. If you're searching for a new role, it's worth paying attention to people who are in that area, in that arena that you're looking at, and work to get some introductions there. But if you do nothing about connecting with others, you just have a LinkedIn account and you haven't paid much attention to it, my advice is, even if you're not looking for a job, freshen it up and fill it out a little bit more, at least quarterly, because LinkedIn is a lot for professional development and job hunts, of course. But it is also kind of become a de facto lookup mechanism for all kinds of people. Recruiters live on it. But in addition, people are looking for speakers. People are looking for, subject matter experts, different kinds of consultants, board members, volunteers for certain things. So the more you can say about your interests and your capabilities and your accomplishments in a fresh way. And so I would say, pay attention to the language you use. It is a great tool for people getting in touch with each other and pursuing those connections. The other thing that's interesting about LinkedIn is, just, I would say, in the last couple of years, they've really beefed up their interest in editorial commentary for people to write, companies to write posts, and for people to showcase their thinking and their discoveries, because it draws lots of people in and you can, tag your content. It becomes a way to demonstrate your thinking about things, and also to discover other people with like interests. They have a full editorial staff. They solicit articles sometimes. It's easy to figure out ways to spread them among your network, that kind of thing. So it's become a really interesting platform for a variety of reasons.
One of the things I learned in reading this chapter in particular of the book is my LinkedIn summary is essentially a summary of my work history, which you see in full later down the page. But you say to frame your summary with an eye toward your aspirations.
Yes, I think the fact that you have the chronology of work, that's great. And that obviously can you can continue to trim and revise that how you like. But the top, that summary, is really the only place where you can paint a bigger picture, a 10,000-foot view. And this is very helpful, especially if you're looking to change industry or kind of positions you want to say, based on my, past experience, I'm really passionate about this, product management or communications or whatever it is. And paint the bigger picture for people, because then they'll read the chronology below with a sort of fresh eye. And that's the only place to go a little broader and be more well-rounded, perhaps, and future-oriented, too.
Well, Karen, knowing that hiring managers are reviewing and factoring in social media accounts to screen potential hires, what would you say are some of your tips for how we can shape what our cumulative activity says about us?
Well, yes, they are looking, all recruiters and hiring managers. So it's not that you have to be on all of them. It's not that they all have to be active. But I would say it's not a matter so much of deleting accounts unless you really had a very colorful past that doesn't jibe with what you want to do now. But for the most part, it just pays to be cognizant of what you're posting and how it looks kind of cumulatively, right? Sort of what would be your impression of you, you know, if someone showed you recent times, the last 10 or 15 thing items you posted on any of the platforms. It's a good way to just say, this shows that I'm well-rounded, or this shows that I'm creative, whatever it is. That's the thing to be conscious of, I think.
I, for one, am glad that social media didn't really exist until I was almost 40. very, very glad for that fact. Well, Karen says that email is still the quote-unquote killer app. Karen, what are some of the best uses of email for networking, and when should we be ready to go beyond email?
I am a big believer in email for especially this purpose, connecting people one-to-one, making introductions, following up on introductions. You can't really do that easily within a LinkedIn private message or a Facebook or Twitter DM or whatever. You need a little more of a canvas there, if you're asking a favor or you want to explain, you want to give more context. So email is still key for this. And I actually have some examples in the book about how to reach out to a weak tie and say, we haven't been in touch for a while, but I'd like to ask you this, or I'd like to introduce you to so-and-so, which, by the way, I always recommend doing first before you connect two people.
Definitely.
No cold connects there, you know, no cold calls. In any case, it's great for that setup in particular, or for if you need some specific. It's an easy and asynchronous way for someone to answer you, right? It doesn't have the immediacy of a call or a direct message or a text or something. So if you frame your question or your note correctly, then someone will say, yeah, I'll answer you tomorrow, or I have someone for you, but give me a couple of days, whatever it is. You can really only easily do that on email. But I would say if you're going to have an ongoing exchange about, even if it's just a set on a date for something, or there's more than two people in an email, sometimes I have stopped email threads and said, I'm going to pick up the phone now, right? we're going to just talk about this, because when it just starts going on and on, that's a sign that that's not the best medium anymore.
Well, thankfully, it hasn't happened too often, but I know I cringe those times where I get an email introduction to someone and I didn't know it was coming. It just comes out of the blue.
Exactly. You want context, and you don't want that to happen to you or anybody else, because it also lessens the chances of success with the follow-up. So
absolutely. Well, I've touched on many of the chapters in the first two parts of the book. I'm going to move on to some questions not directly related to the book, Karen. But before I do that, is there anything else from the book, maybe even from part three, that you want to make sure we walk away with?
You know, I think the main thing is something I mentioned earlier. People are flattered to be asked for help, and people do want to help each other. And I think that the thing to remember is we're all going to be in that situation for some question or issue or another. So to feel like, oh, I can't bother that person, or, you know, I don't know what to ask, or I'm not ready to ask, or I don't want to take their time, whatever it is, really try and get over that so that, because just remember, other people are going to feel the same way. I think this notion of networking that we talked about in the beginning is, I'm on one side with my need or my question, everyone else is, it's a faceless mass of people, and they all have it all figured out, and it's just me alone over here. That's just not the case. It's just not reality. Everyone is feeling that aloneness, or they're going to have a question, or they're curious about something. So just try and, you know, break that down a little bit, and remember, everybody wants to help each other, and everybody likes to be asked. It's all about the context and the timing, but that basic fact, I think, is really the core of the whole thing.
Well, I want you to think back to books that you've read that have impacted you over the years, helped you in your career, and share with us maybe two or three titles, Karen, that have had that impact on you, maybe the biggest impact, and share how or why they've impacted you as they have, if you can.
Yeah, well, I won't go too far back because I want things that are still in print. But I will say I'm a big fan of the TED book series, which are all small books. I think they're published by Simon & Schuster, in fact. And I've heard this author also speak, Margaret Heffernan. She is a longtime executive, and she just has a very clever way of talking about company culture that I like very much. So the book of hers that I have enjoyed and I believe in and I've seen to be true is called Beyond Measure: The Big Impact of Small Changes. And it's really about company culture, which is something I care a lot about, have thought a lot about, Margaret Heffernan. Another recent one that I appreciate, perhaps some of your listeners are already Chip Conley fans. He's written, I think, 5 or 6 books now, you know, a hotel entrepreneur. And his most recent book is called Wisdom at Work: The Making of a Modern Elder. And it's really partly Chip's experience entering kind of a digital company. He went to work for a while at Airbnb. So that was his first kind of exposure to what I'm used to from my years in Silicon Valley, a technology company with a young workforce. Chip was, I think, 52 when he went there. And he goes well beyond that experience to talk about the growing phenomenon and the growing number of people, I might add, who are in a longer middle age, what we used to call middle age. And it's very inspiring, and I've just enjoyed he's a creative thinker, so I'd like that a lot.
Well, in my research for this conversation on YouTube, I found a number of examples of you speaking at organizations like Google, at TNW 2019, DLD conference, and others. I'd be curious to know, Karen, what are some of your tips as you face audiences for delivering a talk that's going to land, that's going to be impactful and going to be memorable to the audience?
Well, it's been a long, slow, painful journey, frankly. Being on stage is not my favorite thing, and I've had to do a lot of trial and error. So the fact that you'd go back to, I think that DLD talk was 2012. So in relation to this book, I've had to get help designing and then redesigning kind of a talk about the book, right? And a talk about the ideas behind the book. And so one thing I've learned is, for me, it's important to talk from notes and be informal, as opposed to, I have the set of slides, but the key for me is the slides are all visual. They're all pictures.
Yeah.
And so then I have notes and I do refer to those and talk from them, but I can wing it a little bit so that it's more conversational without going off script. And I also picked on purpose, all the images in my current talk are of animals. So I think that helps because people like that. It's maybe not expected so much as at a business conference or something like that. So I've learned that. I do not say I'm a master of this, and I still am not very good at walking the stage. I kind of stand still with the clicker, right. But I'll get there maybe someday.
Well, you know, I think the biggest lesson there is you're aware of the things you want to improve.
Yes. And somewhat to play to my strengths.
Absolutely. I like to include lots of pictures of puppies in my presentation, so I get the animal thing. Well, what would you say, now that the paperback version is about to be released, what is ahead for you and your team? What are you guys working on that you're excited about?
You know, I've been a long time writer and editor, and I'm really passionate about good communications. And that hasn't abated. I mean, that's why I joined Twitter. I saw it as a new publishing platform. That's why in earlier years, I became a big believer in corporate blogs. And now, by the way, I feel like in a way, I'm still there, but there continue to be new platforms to work with. And now there's a name for this on the part of companies, owned content, right? As opposed to paid content or earned media. And so owned content is all the stuff that a company or organization puts out on behalf of itself. And our standards now have gotten very high about, it's not about press releases. It's not about kind of stiff product announcements. People are, and it's not just consumer brands, right? All kinds of entities know that they have to engage and get attention in very creative and interesting ways. And I would add, kind of have a drumbeat of a cadence of news and information that is not just about, you know, the company milestones. And that continues to interest me because the canvas has gotten so much bigger.
Excellent. Well, her name again is Karen Wickrey, and the book is called Taking the Work Out of Networking, Your Guide to Making and Keeping Great Connections. Love the book. Karen, thank you so much for being here. Really appreciate you taking time to appear on the Read to Lead podcast.
Jeff, I've really enjoyed it. Thank you so much for having me.
I encourage you to pre-order Karen's book right now. A link to do just that, along with the other books and resources Karen talked about and that podcast I recommended, can all be found at the show notes page I've created just for this episode. You'll find that at readtoleadpodcast.com/289 for episode 289. If you have feedback you'd like to share, you've got a comment or a question, or maybe like Kathleen, you need a book recommendation, you can write me directly at jeff@readtoleadpodcast.com. And finally, consider visiting our sponsor. You can find out more about FreshBooks Cloud Accounting Software at freshbooks.com/readtolead. Enter Read to Lead in the How Did You Hear About Us section. Well, that does it for this week. I look forward to seeing you next time for the next episode of the Read to Lead podcast. Until then, remember, leaders read and readers lead.
You love podcasts, the stories, the laughs, the unexpected turns. But when this episode ends, the silence starts. Not anymore. Audiobooks.com turns that silence into your next great adventure. With over 450,000 titles, from bestsellers to hidden gems, your love for listening just found its new best friend. And because you already know the joy of audio, we're giving you 3 free audiobooks to start your journey. Imagine your favorite podcast, now with unlimited episodes. That's audiobooks.com. Keep the story going. Sign up for your free trial at audiobooks.com/podcast-free today. Because for podcast lovers like you, the end of an episode is just the beginning. That's audiobooks.com/podcast-free.